With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So we are once again celebrating 20 years of 24. This is the 20-year mark of the airing of the pilot from 2001. It's hard to believe it's 2021 already, but we are talking about it, and we are thrilled to have as our guest for today, director, actor, musician, James Morrison.
Justin and Ryan, thanks very much.
Welcome. Thanks you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
What's on your plate these days?
My plate is, the most important thing is that my plate is just in this home restaurant, as we all have been, mostly.
Sure.
You know, I'm working on a couple of things. I'm working on the one-man play that I wrote that I started just as we started to shut down. It was just getting some traction and starting to go into development in a couple of places, and then this all happened.
Right.
So I'm working on that.
Okay.
I'm working on my golf game, which is also my sort of inner self game. The Zen of golf, the yoga of golf. I'm spending a lot of great time with my family. My boy is home, you know, colleging from home.
Okay.
He's in his final quarter of his 4 years at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And so that's been great to have him here, you know, in the home dorm room.
A lot of reconnection happening these days.
It was hard having him gone because we're a very close family. So it's nice to have him back.
Well, and I have a question. You collaborate quite a bit on projects and different things with your wife. One of them being Showing Up, which I was trying to find. I really wanted to watch before we talked today, but I'd love to hear about that project.
We're sort of in transition with that in terms of streaming. You know, for some reason, it's kind of old school to have DVDs, but we do have them. They're accessible through the website, which is showingupmovie.com. It's an amazing journey into the world of the audition through the mind and heart of some of our greatest actors.
Yeah. Quite a list of people that were involved in that as well, for sure.
Yeah, I could tick them off, but I wouldn't remember them right now. They're just, my mind is blank. I'm so present with you guys. That
that's right. You know. Thank you very much. So that project, it's been out. It's available on DVD. People can order
it. It's on DVD. And the streaming, we're trying to decide what we want to do with the streaming. We're trying to decide what's best for moving forward right now. But the DVD is available through the website, yeah.
Okay. I like the behind-the-scenes stuff. That's why I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'd love to hear the behind-the-scenes stories. There was a doc called That Guy Who Was In That Thing a couple of years ago.
Greg Itzen, speaking of Greg, is in that, I think.
Yeah.
That guy in that thing or something, yeah.
Yeah, and I have two friends in L.A. I only have two friends, but I have two friends in L.A. One is in casting for Bold and Beautiful, and then my other friend is an actress that works in Canada and lived in L.A. for the last several years. That's why I'm looking forward to seeing Showing Up, because I get the perspective from them on both sides of the table of being somebody who's auditioning constantly and then somebody who is constantly seeing people.
We examine the difference between, because we have some hyphenates, director, actors, and then a couple of people who just direct. We talked to one casting director. We just wanted to keep it sort of in the family of, because we were thinking about our audience. And once we realized that the audience was going to be mostly actors or people in the business, I think it's a whole other film. If we were going to talk to casting directors about the audition process, I think that would be a separate film in and of itself, because
sure.
It's an amazing process. And what we discovered through, actually, and Janine Garofalo, who's speaking of 24 in season 7, yeah, she was wonderful. She's the one who actually finally just, and we'd heard this a few times during the process of interviewing people and from people in the crew and friends that we talked to who aren't in the business, who saw it. They all said, you know, everybody auditioned.
Absolutely.
Doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
And when she said that, and we used her quote in the film, it was sort of blew the lid off our idea of what the film wanted to be, what the narrative through line was. What we came away with was that the process is not just limited to actors. And I mean, we all go through this process of putting ourselves out there to achieve what we want to get. The biggest part of it is not getting it and having to regroup and then go back in again, because we're constantly faced with, I don't like to call it rejection, because right. it's not really rejection in the classic sense of the word.
Well, I'll give you my friend's story for the soap opera. Sure. She said there's people that she brings in whenever there's something coming up. So she'll bring them in multiple times. And she said they get dejected because they're not landing something. They keep coming back, but they're not landing something. She said, if I'm calling you back, I'm trying to find something for you. she said that has brought comfort and, you know, a different perspective to some of the people that she keeps calling back. You keep calling me back, but I'm not getting anything. And she's saying, no, I'm trying to see where there's a fit.
Everyone has their own perspective based on where they are in their, I say career, but what I mean is in the process. Speaking of 24, this will be a segue back into the show, but I would be called in by casting directors numerous times and not get the part. I can count one of them. I think it was Moonlighting. Remember Moonlighting?
I do, yes.
12 times. Same thing with any one of the incarnations of the Star Trek
Got it.
Franchise.
Next Generation.
I mean, every one of them.
Yeah.
I, over the years, I was called in for every one of them. Same casting director for most of them. I mean, they would go jump from one to one or one to the other, but it was the same producers.
Was it Manny Cotto of 24? He worked on Star Trek, didn't he?
He may have been in the room. I mean, I mean, I did audition. He took me to Network once for a Showtime sci-fi thing before I met him on 24. What I'm saying, though, is that you get to the point where you go, oh, 15 times I've read for these people and they haven't hired me. What's it's a dry well? I mean, I might as well not even go back. But the truth of the matter is what your friends said. If they didn't want to find something for you. However, you're on a show that's high profile like 24, and people then decide, oh, well, he's this guy on this thing. Let's just give him an offer to come in and do this thing. He doesn't even have to audition. We'll make this thing right for him.
To fit you, sure.
So then you go, well, wait a minute, that blows that other theory out of the water. If they really wanted to hire me in this thing, they would do that too. If you reach for somebody for 15 different roles, you've done quite a range
you've seen performances. All many angles,
I mean, I've given them 15 little performances. And the other thing is there's so many people making the decision. It's just not one person. But they all, you know, one of the benefits of having been on 24 is that for a while they just call and say, we want you to do this thing on this series as a recurring character or as a regular. It doesn't matter.
What was your entry onto the show?
Oh, no, I read with a room full of guys just like me, same age, same, you know, journeyman actors, been around for a while, solid. And they picked me out of this group for who knows why. There were some other factors involved. My manager had a lot to do with it. He really went to the mat for me and stepped up above and beyond the call of duty to help that process. And the stars just aligned. I mean, how do you know how that happened? Any one of the guys that were read for this thing could have done a great job. They were fine actors.
You were in a position, you got thrown into the day of a show that was up and running.
Yes. Right?
And I rewatched some of those early episodes again. You got thrown into a day where not only are you coming in as the threat to the royal couple, I'd forgotten about that angle, that there had been a history with you and Michelle. And all of a sudden, we refer to Michelle and Tony as the royal couple on 24.
Yes. Okay.
We watched them on their first date. We watched them, you know, kind of get married and get together. And then when we meet you, you are now the potential problem with that situation.
You were the head of CTU at that moment, I think.
Oh, no, I walked in from division or something.
Right, right.
Tony and they weren't they doing, I just rewatched it because I wanted to watch it from a distance, you know, and it's a really good show.
it's a really good show, isn't it?
It's a good show, yeah. They did a good job. I'm proud to have been on it, and I was excited to see, wow, that guy, you know, I usually used to use the analogy of the metaphor of a speeding train, and they said, go ahead and jump aboard.
Right, yeah.
And so I just sort of did, you know, but I think it's more like they said that the garbage disposal was on. And they said, I just dropped something valuable in there. Can you reach in there and get it?
What a great analogy.
Yeah, okay.
Your first hour, there was an assassination that actually went through. There had been several assassination attempts over the seasons on different presidents. It actually takes place. When I look at that now as a plot line and think that they actually did it, even though I knew that show would do anything, all bets were off. That still, it was shocking to me to watch that part again and go, they took down Air Force One. Oh my goodness.
What was your experience like on 24 as, you know, playing Bail Buchanan for many seasons and working with all the actors and the crew members and Fox and Brian Grazer and the studio and all that? And do you keep in touch with any of the actors or crew members?
Oh, you know, I'm still in contact with, you know, Mary Lynn and Carlos and I, or, you know, whenever we see each other, it's great. And yeah, I mean, I left with friends for life. Howard and I exchange emails every now and again. And there's not a person in the cast or crew. I mean, listen, when I was on the show one year, we went to like five crew members and my family went to Hawaii together for a vacation.
Wow.
Who goes on vacation with people they work with?
That's
so
awesome.
That's the kind of family we were on the show.
I mean, and even Janine was part of, you know, showing up.
They were very kind. Michael Click and Howard and those guys were very kind to me when I was shooting. They let me go to New York to get a lot of the interviews that we did.
Right.
We shot that while I was on the show. So.
And you directed it.
And my wife and I directed it, yeah. Going back to this, as I look back on the experience now, I really wanted to make a testimonial about people just talking about this thing so we could see how they felt about it. I didn't want to do a how-to audition thing, and I think it's been faulted for this. I think it's a strength, but you know, people want to see, you know, the inside of a room that you go into. Well, I mean, you know, a room is a room. The most important room that I wanted to reveal and to expose and to go into was this room.
Sure.
Or this room, you know. Yeah. And the only way you can do that, and I talked to a lawyer friend about this. He said, you know, when people are giving testimony, even if it's video testimony, which is sometimes necessary, especially now, they don't cut away from that person because they want to be able to see their eyes. You've got to be able to evaluate this person's testimony in person. You can tell right now if I'm lying. So that's what we decided to stick with. And when they started to reveal themselves, actors like Steven Spinella, who was on in season 6, Jack O'Brien, B.D. Wong, Yul Vasquez, those guys came in on that day, Kristen Chenoweth. Now the names are starting to come back to me. Those were the first people that we talked to, and they just opened up their hearts. And we, that's when we said, okay, we know what this is going to be about. This is going to be about people talking about this thing.
Now, my friend has a saying that says, will you do that thing that it will take you? If you know that the person in front of you can help get you the next step, are you willing to do that thing to convince them, to persuade them, to let them see what you're capable of?
Absolutely. Well, listen, they talk about it in recovery, too. I mean, they say, you know, will you go to any lengths to get this thing? Today is Jackie Robinson Day. My favorite things that he said was that a life is not important except in the impact that it has on other lives. If you translate that to walking into a room as whatever it is you are and saying, how can I serve you? How can I be of service to you? It's not about you at all. One of the best audition experiences I've ever had in my life was a job that I wasn't even up for. I was asked by casting director Deborah Zane to help her cast Kingdom of Heaven with a Ridley Scott movie. My wife and I, both of us, helped. So we read with actors. It was full-on old-school Hollywood-type screen test for these guys,
right,
for the lead in this movie.
Right, yeah.
And we were in full costume. I was in chainmail, and fire was burning next to me. It was amazing. We read with these guys that were reading for the lead in this thing. Orlando Bloom ended up getting it. When I was working with them for a couple of days before the actual thing, we worked with Ridley, and we rehearsed the thing, and we talked about it. He always referred to me as the character's name. He never, in fact, at one point I went, I want Ridley Scott to know my name.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
That was my actor's ego, you know. And I went, no, man, I was trained to do this anyway. My acting teacher for 35, 40 years now. I am this guy. Why do I want to be James to this director? I want to be this character. This is not about me. I'm serving this story. I'm serving this director. I'm serving these other actors. I thought, man, if I can take this feeling into every audition that I have, how can I be of service? Here I am, this person that you're looking, this character that you're looking for, has nothing to do with me, James the actor. And that's, I think, going back to 24, I think that was the most amazing thing to me about the show, working on the show, is that we were these people. Between action and cut, and in the way we think about we approach the work. I mean, everybody, not just the actors, but the crew, everybody. The camera operator was in the scene, you know, Guy Skinner, the handheld operator, He was a part of the scene, man. We had to step over him sometimes, and you know, while maintaining eye contact with the person we're talking to, and we knew he was there, but we had to move. You know, I mean, it was all. But it doesn't matter what we were doing.
What was the process like filming a season of 24 from start to finish?
I don't really remember that, and also because we were interrupted that one year with the strike, and so we were on hold. I think we were one of only two shows that were on hold and paid while we were waiting because they couldn't lose him. They couldn't lose us. You know, the about the process, though, and I credit John Cassar with this, but John was sort of the, you know, the glue that held the creative thing together. And when I got there, this process of reading the scenes with just the actors and the director and the script supervisor and working it out before the crew came in, and we would figure it out. We would do rewrites. We would do adjustments we had to make. And then we would block it, and we would figure all that stuff out. Then they would invite the crew in. So we would have this private thing before the crew then was treated to it so that they could figure out what they were going to do. It wasn't just a throw it together kind of experience. And then when we shot it, we shot each scene from beginning to end. We hardly ever did pickup shots. We shot each scene like it was a little play that we had rehearsed and that we, you know, fine-tuned the especially the walk and talk stuff where you would start at one end of this huge CPU and then walk and then stop and in the room. And right. I mean, that stuff was, it's not easy to do. And so then they just change up the cameras and the lenses and stuff to come in tighter. And then they bring Guy in finally, they got really tight for the handheld stuff. It was a really consistent process in that way. And I think it was pretty much John that was behind all that.
Sounds very collaborative too. To me, sounds like input into the character, into what you would do and how you would react, and
I mean, I remember a couple of scenes that I worked on with Carlos too, because you know, not every actor is a writer. Not every actor can. I think it was Jack Nicholson that said, you know, every actor has to be a writer too, because you have to be able to either improvise if that's part of the process, the filming process, which it sometimes is. It wasn't on 24, but during the rehearsal process. There were times when I would say, you know, just because I had a lot of exposition, you know, like, this is what just happened. This is where we are. This is who I'm talking to. This is what we're going to, you know, at the beginning of the thing. And I was and that stuff is hard to write in the first place, because it's hard to make it sound like a human being is doing it. It always ends up usually sounding like it's written. I think if I said, let me try this and say this here, and the script supervisor would say, and I remember this specifically a couple times, well, as long as you include Centox gas, this is where Jack is, and this plot point, like a saga cell, like we would recap, you know, and so I would retool it. And then there was a scene we did right early off. You were talking about earlier about the relationship between Carlos and Michelle and I, and how that right, you know, what, when I first appeared as Buchanan, that figured heavily into the attention of the day.
You know? I mean, we're primed not to like you. Right, coming in on your first day.
Yeah, and you already like these guys, and I'm the cog in the wheel. All of a sudden, you know, we worked that out between John and Carlos and I. Even though there's no history between he and I, we had to create the tension that about the history that you're just learning about, and it was new to everybody else too, because some changes went down right before I came in that necessitated me coming in. It was great to be a part of that collaboration. That's the best word I can think of. And the only other people I've worked with in television that are like that was everything I did with Morgan and Wong. You know, Glenn Morgan was the same. It worked in the same sort of way.
Which projects with Morgan and Wong?
The Space Above and Beyond was the first time I met them. And Glenn was very, very inclusive and particular about including my thoughts about my backstory or things that we might be revealed in terms of who the character was, and that doesn't happen. That really doesn't happen. I mean, it's a rare showrunner or executive producer that really confers with you. Or, you know, they mostly just bring you stuff, and that reminds me of when I worked with Jada Pinkett Smith on Hawthorne too. She would come to me and say, "Here's what we're thinking about, where we're thinking about going," and I went, I looked at her oddly, you know, she said, "What? It's wonderful that you're telling me this, because we never really know. We're never really informed. It just happens, and we go, oh, I've been on things where, you know, I get the script, and I go, oh, and they kill me in the script. And I go, what? Gee, it would have been nice for them to call me and say, oh, we're killing you.
I love what you said about serving this story. And as you're talking about it, and the whole concept of serving the story is coming out in everything that you're saying, which I think is fascinating. You get onto these moving trains. The first time I remember seeing you was on The X-Files. It was on the episode called Thief. It was a moving train. X-Files was, you know, season 7, I think, by that point. And you served the story. The more I think about it, you know, based on what you said today, I go, he came in and he served that story. Revenge was another one, where you came in and you served that story of a moving train that was, you know, in full bloom, and your character really fit that.
And same with SVU as well.
It's wonderful. They're great people.
In our 24 Universe, the Facebook page, we're the kind of group where if you're doing something, we're going to post, hey, you've got to see, this is what James is doing on this show. Or, you know, it's like we all kind of alert each other, like, this show is worth checking out because
yes,
this person's involved in it. There's a pedigree that 24 has among kind of the fans of 24 that says, if Roger Cross is doing something, we're going to check that out. If Carlos Bernard mm-hmm. is directing something, we're going to watch it. And that's pretty much what we do on the Facebook page, is kind of share what everybody's up to.
The 24 Universe Facebook group page has also become like a family too. Like,
yeah.
I think a lot of the 24 fans, we all know each other by first and last name now. I think all the fans have become like friends and family now, because we have Absolutely. A common interest of loving 24. You were one of my favorite characters on 24, Bill Buchanan. I really liked your character. And when they killed you off in season 7 at the White House, that was very, very sad.
Oh, you spoiled it for everybody.
this is a spoiler zone. If people haven't watched it at this point, they won't want to listen to this podcast. If they're afraid of spoilers, then they
you have to edit that out.
You know, that was funny. We should be talking about this, because when we filmed that, it was I think because of the strike, it was another year, 6 months. It seemed like forever. We'd filmed it. I was dead. People would say, how's the show going? And I'm going, oh, yeah, great.
Wonderful. Put on a happy face. I watched that again a couple days ago. And I remember at the time, because we were watching week to week, and just sitting at the end of, again, sitting just stunned, looking at the TV going, well, now what am I going to do? When I watched it again, what I noticed this last time through was what you didn't say. I would love to know how you two worked out that scene. Because there's a scene where you can see Jack is starting to realize what you're really saying. Mm-hmm. And you're spelling it out for him, like, I'm going to do this. You're not going to do this. I'm going to do it.
I struggled with that because I didn't want to telegraph anything, of course. I didn't want to take that moment to give Jack a nod and a smile, or, you know, squeeze his thigh goodbye or something. You know, I didn't want people to know what I had in mind to do. When I say, I think my last line to him was, you're the only one who can do it.
You're the only one I know who can do this, Jack. Find out who Jim was working with.
And so what does that mean? Bang. I wanted the audience to be Jack at that point. They needed to have that element of surprise. So it had to be quick. I mean, I couldn't say goodbye.
But just there's something about the dialogue between you two that's a brotherhood in there that's exposed in those like 3 or 4 minutes.
If you watch the evolution of our relationship
in
the time that I was on the show. But we have moments where we're really pissed at each other. You know, he chokes me out at one point, but he does it out of love.
Yeah, when he wanted to torture, he choked you when he wanted to torture Ryan Burnett in season 7. He did that. He choked you there
because I wouldn't, and then I wouldn't do that. I told him I couldn't do that when he's in jail. What my point is that it was an interesting relationship. We were close. We had enormous respect for each other, and I think that was the way it was too on the show too. I mean, he's a wonderful actor, and he's particularly good in this show. He has some moments of the conflict that he had to convey without being ham-fisted about it. That's a tough task, and he really pulled it off. Plus, he's a hard worker, man. He works his ass off.
Sure.
It was a great experience. I learned a lot. I learned a lot from him, actually.
Is that someone you keep in touch with these days, is Kiefer?
No, we never had a social, I mean, very much like Bill and Jack.
Right, yeah. It's funny you said that. I wouldn't picture Bill and Jack going out for coffee.
I mean, I'd love to sometime. I think that'd be great, but I just don't know. And I think Howard, in particular, is the same kind of a showrunner and writer that Glenn Morgan is, which is the kinds that they look at the dynamic of and the chemistry between the people, which I think is why I ended up being there so long, was there was a chemistry. that, sure. that was undeniable between me and the situation in the show. You know, they capitalize on those strengths, but not just me. I'm talking about this. They watch more closely, I think, that kind of chemistry. You know, they write to the strengths of the people. And, you know, most people don't. I mean, you know, I've worked on a lot of stuff, and some of them just say, this is the way it is. It's going to be this way.
Right.
Learn this or go. And you go, well, okay, that's not going to be much fun. So, but then you get these guys and you go, man, this is, it's like true love. I mean, it's a once, maybe twice in a lifetime thing.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's so much TV, right? There's so much going on right now. Friends that are fans of 24, I'm really rethinking a lot of things based on what you said about serving the story, because those are people that the story is tantamount, and they're going to do whatever it takes to get that, and they're going to take whatever risks to get that story out, which I think is...
Well, that's why we didn't want to do a how-to audition thing, because so many people walk into an audition and they go, I've got to do something to make these people remember me, and I've got to be interesting, and I've got to be... You know, I've got to really leave them with the taste of me. They're looking for how well do you understand the story that they wrote, and how much are you willing to let go of yourself to serve it? They want to see that person that they wrote come in the door. They don't want to see this stud walking in or this amazing woman walk in with and wow them with their acting chops or their presence or whatever. Right. No, they want to see the person that they wrote sitting there.
So there's a basic misunderstanding that's being taught to people who want to get into the profession.
Those of us who've tried to teach acting, and I did for about a year, and I realized that it wasn't for me, because mostly because people really want to learn the quick fix to get the job. Well, the quick fix to get the job is to serve the story. They go, yeah, no, I know that, but what do I do when I'm in there? And I go, well, you serve the story, and but when I'm in there, I mean, I've got to. And you know, finally, just go. You know, I'm just not getting through to you. So,
and how did you get to that point? Like, is it when you started acting? Were you understanding the importance of serving the story? Is that something that's carried through for you, or is that?
Well, you know, I did it initially because we do as when I first got an inkling that this make believe is what I wanted to do. It's what we would do when we watch something. We suspend our disbelief and we go into that world completely, and we're willing to be, you know, when the curtain goes up and we're an audience, we're not sitting there, okay, you know,
prove it.
Show
me
what you got, Mr. Exactly. Actor Man. You know,
yeah.
We want to be taken on this trip. You know, we're willing to go. We do that as kids too. We you know, I'm going to be the bad guy. You be the good guy. But when you tell somebody in acting class, it's just pretend. It's really hard for them to let go of this need for technique or methodology or all this stuff. Kids don't think about that.
Right.
They just go, yeah, let's do that. And they accept that they are the person they're pretending to be. And there's no schizophrenia. There's no James the actor and James the World War II fighting guy, you know, in the dirt pit. You know, like, I come from the theater, and I had a director once say, you know, they call this a play. They don't call it a work. It's not a pain in the ass to do it. And oh, by the way, leave all that stuff at the door when you come in, because it doesn't have anything to do with the story. So that's sort of how I was indoctrinated. In high school, you know, community college when I first started acting. But then also, you know, there was this need for acting technique. Finally, I met this guy in L.A., Harry Master George, my teacher for, you know, since 40 years. I met him in 1982. And his whole thing is, you know, it's a child's game of make-believe. And our job is to create the illusion of reality, not to create reality, because every once in a while that voice comes in, the ego, you know, the need for, you know, acceptance and the need for validation. That doesn't matter. That's not what Tennessee Williams had in mind when he wrote the play. He wanted you to be Brick, and your wife Maggie was
me.
And you had these memories of Skipper, and you know you wanted to get the click. Yeah. That's all he cared about. So what does anything else have to do with it?
You mentioned the through line as you were doing showing up and the through line that was carrying through it. I was thinking about that the other day with this podcast. What is the through line? And I think you summed up the through line into what we're doing and from what we've discovered in the people we've talked to is that they were kids reading a story. And they didn't, you know, when they started to say, well, is it crazy that we're going to do another season of one consecutive day? And then when they were going back and forth on whether they're going to try it again, they thought like kids and went, why not? There was no playbook for a show that operated in real time. And what translates in all of our conversations is the actual glee that people have years later on a project that they did 10, 12 years ago. The excitement that you are showing in your experience on 24, we've seen with all of our other guests.
Same with the creators too. I mean, the creators have shown like Howard Gordon.
Look at the resources that they had to play with. I mean, they had some of the best actors working. I count myself lucky to be among them. And they had this great premise, and they had this amazing sets. It was an amazing experience, even as an audience. I mean, you know, you're talking from your perspective. 24 is a great example of it. I mean, Twin Peaks is another one. Mm-hmm. Peaky Blinders. Pick a show that you love to watch these people go. All these great characters and going through this imaginary circumstances so convincingly. They believe it to such a degree that you believe everything they do. Are there times in 24 where you go, well, how come he's not going to the bathroom? I mean, that's not part of the story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got to suspend your disbelief, but at the same time, you're going, man, they believe this, and I'm going with them. They're going to take me wherever they go. I'll go with them.
James, what are your thoughts on the future of 24 as an actor?
I do remember a story I heard early on about the genesis of this idea that they wanted to do this real time experience, and I think they had a bunch of different premises laid out. One of them was a medical thing, or they picked this one for obvious reasons, you know, the political intrigue. I think there were a lot of aspects that really made this sort of, you know, the stars line up. It would take, I think, that sort of thing happening again. You always get in trouble because I remember I was in a play that I met my wife in, actually. El Salvador, it was called. And it was a huge hit in the L.A. theater in 1988, a little theater in the valley. I think that they had 45 seats in this theater, but it was such an amazing cast. And the script and the chemistry of the people, the stars lined up for this thing. And it ran forever. Got every award you can get. And I got the girl. I got the biggest award there was.
Yeah,
my point is, the director once asked me, well, we're talking about the experience in this way. And I said, well, you know, the stars lined up, man. I mean, I don't know if you believe in the higher power, whatever you believe in. I mean, we didn't do this by ourselves. This was a moment in time that was meant to be, and it happened just at the right moment. We all decided, because there were things that I was up for at the time that if they had happened, and I turned one of them down to do this thing. So it was meant to be, in other words. It's bigger than any one of us. It's bigger than all of us together. It's bigger than big.
24 was a moment in time at the right time. It was an iconic moment in television. It started the whole idea of binge watching.
And we refer to it as making TV like film, bringing the element of film to it. I wasn't watching a TV show in that first season. I was watching an ongoing film.
Absolutely. Yeah, the level of tension was so great, So to keep that up, eight years. You see the influence, the reason I brought up Twin Peaks too, because it's the same sort of thing. The first year that was on, it influenced the way people did television from that point on, and that the same with 24. It's quite an honor to have been on one of them.
James, what fires you up about collaborating with your wife on projects?
Well, other than the fact that she's when you're collaborating with anybody on anything, it's somebody likened, especially filmmaking, to people would dispute this, I guess. But it's like being at war. Somebody's always going to be standing there going, you can't do that. Don't do it that way. Or I'm going to stop you. I'm going to do everything I can to stop you from doing this. And so it's not something for the faint-hearted, and it's not something for the weak-spirited to go into. And if you've got your best friend and ally by your side, you want to work with people that you respect and that you know have your back, and plus she's really sexy and beautiful.
You know, all the right moments, absolutely yeah awesome. Well, the last thing I would love to cover is your music, because I've known about you recording and playing, and people, when they want to find it on Spotify, it's your full name, right?
My all three names, yeah.
James Page Morrison. Okay, so yeah. People
can find him. A couple of singers Spotify named James Morrison.
So people, you can find him on Spotify, you can find him on streaming, but I'd love to find out how you have chosen to pursue that side of the arts.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you were talking about from a fan standpoint of watching what people do when they leave a certain thing, going on to other things. And well, I used to do that with the music. When I was in my early teens, I was a huge fan of the Byrds, Buffalo Springfield, sort of a folk country rock, cosmic country, whatever you want to call it,
sure,
Americana
yeah.
blend of stuff. And when one band would break up, I would go, oh my God, okay, Neil Young's going here, Stephen Stills, Jim Messina, Roger McGuinn, David Crosby, they're all
Clapton's
going to their
here,
own things.
You know, yeah.
Then they come back together and join another band. I mean, you know, that's what I did. That was a hobby of mine.
Sure.
And that was my musical influences. And when I started to thrust myself in, you know, by putting words to music, those guys always came to mind, because they were like, when they talk about their influences, they talk about when Keith Richards talks about Chuck Berry and
yeah.
the great blues guys, you know, it's the same thing. And so I was just influenced by those guys and being fans of their creativity, and still am.
I saw Kiefer 4 years ago.
Kiefer, I hadn't started to record anything that I'd written it when I was on the show. And Kiefer, I don't think, had either. I mean, he was still weighing whether or not he wanted to come out public with his stuff. I mean, I remember
right.
talking about it that much with him. But I think he was just at the turning point. And I guess his partner, Jude.
Yeah,
whom I've never met. But I remember that he was instrumental in talking him into doing that. So that was good. You know, I had a guitar teacher while I was on the show. Richard Peacock was a great guitar artist. And he just said to me one day, have you ever written any music? Well, and he had me bring some stuff in and lay it down for him. And he said, yeah, you should keep writing. Let's work on some of these. And so I just, you know, it's like, you know, when we get permission to play, and I just went, oh, okay, I can do that. I can. And so I did. I sort of had all this music in me I didn't know I had. That's what we're at. That's where the thrust of this interview has been, is, you know, serve the story, like we've been saying, and honor the story above all else. You know, I mean, we need those people in our lives to say, yeah, yeah, you can do that. Do that more. I mean, you know what? That thing you wrote, you need to keep writing.
Yeah.
And you go, wow. I mean, that's just hope. Somebody gives you hope.
Right.
When our boy was sick, I mean, we went through a thing with him 11, 12 years ago now. Doctors would say that the simplest thing, when your boy is cured, and I mean, the sky would open just by him saying
that. Just by him saying that, visualizing that.
You know, nobody else says that stuff.
Right, right.
They're afraid to say that stuff because they're afraid to get sued or whatever. But we need to say that to each other in every context, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's hope here. I mean, I was snake bit when I got 24. I thought I'd never work again. And just out of the blue, man. You never know when it's going to happen. And those guys said, no, no, you can do this. You can do this. Here. In fact, here, do this.
How has the pandemic affected work in Hollywood for you as an actor?
Oh, I'll never work again.
That's a great way to wrap us up. You've taken us on a journey today,
yeah.
James. And I'm thinking while we're talking, and I don't like to think very often, but you've had me thinking about through lines and thinking about serving the story. And I've really appreciated listening to you.
Well, thanks, you guys. I appreciate talking to you. And it's a good thing you're doing. Just keep it up.
Find out who Jim was working with.